We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
Star 91.7 FM, you're now listening to the first ever WYXR stereo sessions presented by Mempho and Nexair. Pat Sansone of Baroque Down Palace and program director Jared J.V. Boyd sit down and discuss the mid-1970s sprawling progressive rock opus, Reap the Lost Dreamers from Companion. They also sit down with members of Companion, keyboardist Mike Russell and guitarist Andy Tate.
Hey, thanks everybody. Thanks for everybody for coming. I'm Robbie Grant, executive director of WYXR. I want to thank everybody for coming. We're really excited about tonight. Do want to say a quick thanks to Mempho and Nexair. They're our presenting sponsor. Also Humanities Tennessee. We got a grant through them to help make this happen. As you see, we're recording everything. And thanks to Garner Records, Tambourino, Via Productions. Big thanks. And the biggest special thanks to Memphis Listening Lab. So let's all give Jim Cole of Memphis Listening Lab a big round of applause. They're open. They've been a great partner for us. And, you know, they're open Tuesday through Saturday. You can kind of come around here and check stuff out. And Jim will pull anything off these shelves that you want to hear. And let him pick, though. That's even more fun, is to let you tell him what you like and let him pick. So, but they're a nonprofit. Go to Instagram. You can check them out there and find out what their events are. You can also go to WYXR.org and donate. And we appreciate all of our members that are here and all of our donors. We're really excited about tonight. And next month on March 16th, we're going to be doing Sam the Sham's Hard and Heavy. And he will be here, right? I think we're almost certain he's coming. If not, he's going to come virtually, but he will be here. So we'll open up registrations for that. All these events are free. I really appreciate everybody coming and RSVPing. So I'm going to introduce Jared J.B. Boyd. He's program manager for WYXR and kind of orchestrator of all this. And let him introduce our honored guests here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks, everyone, for coming to WYXR's stereo sessions presented by Mempho and Nexair. My name is Jared J.B. Boyd. I'm the program manager at WYXR. I'm really pleased to have all of you here. The weather's been beautiful this week, but you know, could have easily had one of those. We've been talking all day about February weather, how much we hate the weather. But thank y'all so much for being here to celebrate Memphis music in a way that I think is very near and dear. I mean, what amazing resource we have here at the Memphis Listening Lab to be able to gather and listen and discuss records of all kinds. But you know, I think if you're like me, you might have a special place in your heart for Memphis music, and for me particularly, I love Memphis music that maybe isn't a household name, a household item, a record that everyone has on their shelves. As much as I love the Ring My Bells and the Loves and Happinesses, I really love to get down on my hands and knees and go through boxes and, you know, ask around and find out about records and singles that people maybe haven't heard in a long time. And we are here to celebrate Companion's Reap the Lost Dreamers record. And I'm excited that I have a co-host, one of my favorite people to hang out with, Pat Sansone of Wilco and the Autumn Defense.
Well, thank you. So happy to be here. And the feeling is mutual, JB. I'm always pleased to be here and hanging out with you guys. I love everything about what's happening here. I have a lot of gratitude for being invited into the WYXR family. I host a monthly radio show called The Baroque Down Palace that is a two-hour show once a month that focuses on tracks from the 1960s and 1970s that feature some kind of classical influence from the classical world or symphonic elements in the arrangements, whether it's a lonely harpsichord part or a full orchestra. Or a string quartet, anything from that world that finds its way into the mix of these classic rock tracks is what we focus on the show. I discovered the Companion record about 4 or 5 years ago. It was right about the time that we did our first Mellotron Variations performance here at Crosstown. I had walked into a record store in Nashville, Tennessee, right around the corner from my house, and I saw the record in the bins. And just from the cover, I knew this was something I needed to hear. I could feel the vibes coming from it. So I took it to the desk, and I was talking to my good friend, Jim Cohen, who owned the store, and I asked him if he knew about the record. He didn't know anything about it. It had come into his store anonymously, hadn't listened to it yet. So I said, well, we got to hear this record. So we put it on, and halfway through the first track, I was sold. I was like, I already love this record. We listened a little bit more, and I said, okay, I'll buy it. It had kind of a high price tag. It was about $150 on the tag. But I was like, you know what? After a song and a half, I was like, I'm paying it. I'm down with this. And my friend said, well, let me take it home and just keep it for a night. Come back tomorrow and grab it, because he wanted to hear the whole thing. I came back the next day, and he was like, no, I'm not selling it to you. I'm keeping it. We still laugh about it, and in fact, I talked to him today on the ride over here. It's the only record he's refused to sell to a customer.
Wow.
So we still talk about that, but that's how I found this record, and it really fits in to the music that I like to play on my show, because I play a lot of music that kind of has these textures and has this attitude. So for me to discover a record that was made here in Memphis during that time is really meaningful to me. So consider me a fan.
Well, we're glad to share this record with you, and I'm glad to know I didn't overpay for the record, Pat. We're really, really thrilled to have two members of the Companion Band here with us. Andy Tate, who is here next to me, who played guitar on the record, as well as Mike Russell, who played keyboards and other assortment of synthesizers on the record. Fellas, how are y'all doing? Thanks for being with us. I mean, what goes through your mind when you think about, look at this room of folks who are eager to hear this record. I'm sure some of them have heard it before, but I'm sure many of them have not.
I think the first thing is we're extremely flattered and humbled, to tell you the truth. This was a long time ago, and we enjoyed doing it, but to even experience this and the companionship this many years back is truly flattering.
Did y'all have any inkling that this record has become a collector's item over the time?
You know, I followed a little bit on eBay, or, you know, and of course the CD cover is not like that.
Right. It's a
very different.
Right.
This was the original album art. A fellow named Mike. I don't know, Andy, if you remember him. As we were in, starting out artist as well, he was a artist, and he might have even comped us the deal. I'm not sure, but Mike, and that was his artwork, and took me a while. It was, you know, very Genesis-like, you know, the scroll and everything, but I can't believe the record price. I mean, I know inflation is bad, but that's a little humbling.
Well, we've got, I think, three copies in the room right now, so I think we're going to make a pact that all of them are leaving with the people they came with, right? my understanding is that the band sort of grew from or was born from a pre-existing band, Leviathan. Could you guys tell me just about the origins of Companion and that transition from Leviathan to Companion?
Well, Leviathan was the band that Wayne Bradley, the bass player, played in. He was the only one in that band, actually. They had done a couple of albums, and the first one was picked up by London Records. So after their second album kind of fell off, we put Companion together. Now, we'd known each other for many years before that. They were in a band called The Changing Times, Wayne Bradley and Britt Warner, Changing Times, back in the late 60s. Very, very popular band. A lot of Birds, a lot of Bob Dylan, Beatles type of thing. So they did the two albums, Leviathan, and once that fell off, we got together and kind of picked it up from there.
I know Pat wants to know a little bit more about the recording itself and where it was recorded and all that.
Where were the tracks? Where was the tracking done for the? I see on the liner notes that it was mixed at Ardent, but I don't believe it says where the tracks were recorded.
Yeah, you can have that one. Okay. That happened before I joined. Actually.
That right. I mean, primarily there were the three of us: myself, Britt, and Wayne, and we got Andy to come in later on in the album, one or two tracks. So the album itself was recorded at Royal Studios, which is East Macklemore, on Macklemore, and it was Willie Mitchell's studio, made famous by Al Green. So there's a lot of hit records came out of that room.
And this is also where the Leviathan record was recorded.
Correct,
as well.
Correct.
There was already some comfort.
And luckily, Wayne, having recorded with Leviathan there, knew the console. Because you have to remember, we wrote, produced, engineered the whole thing. We had no outside help. So Wayne luckily knew what he was doing. I mean, there was 16 track at the time, state of the art console, so he knew that. And of course, Britt was the heart.
When you say Britt was the heart, what do you mean by that?
His heart itself was a musical box. He was the kindest, most generous, well-adjusted human being you ever met. He was an Air Force veteran, and he worked on teeth as a dental specialist. He gave us free dental work.
Wow.
Heck of a nice guy.
Can't be Brit.
That's what you want in a guitar player, is someone a guitarist who knows his way around some dental equipment.
Yeah, good smile.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, and I'll refrain from talking about that now, because I'd like for us to listen some before. But I have some thoughts and some questions regarding that very thing that you're talking about. But I don't know if you've seen the video, probably that they posted on the on the YXR Facebook, but there is a video of a performance. Is Britt singing? Is he the lead singer in that performance?
It was the Anytime Anywhere.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Almost okay, exclusively.
Okay, okay,
yeah.
So
lead
that's and are you the one that's playing the double neck? Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Now, I'm not sure your listeners. I guess it may be obvious, and maybe I'm just stating the obvious. But we each had three offerings. Mine was Wine for the Dreamers. It was the prelude, and the Britt's was The Lonely Reaper, and Wayne Bradley's was Lost My Past to You. So Britt, in his infinite wisdom, one day said, "Well, Reap the Lost Dreamers is the name." And of course, you knew that.
I did. Well, I know that now, And I'm glad you've told me that, because I was curious about what the title of the album is in reference to.
That was it. Reap the Lost Dreamers. And we said, yeah, that's it.
It's an extremely evocative title. And as we're going to hear, the record has so much beauty and mystery. And I can't wait to hear it in this room.
Were there any conversation about, you know, how to distinguish this companion outfit from the previous Leviathan music, or was it a continuation in spiritually, or was there a discussion about let's do something a little different?
You know, I didn't know much about Leviathan. I knew a few of the members, and I liked their sound, but Companion was Britt came out with this phrase, "Let our music be your companion," so it really was different. There was Leviathan was a kind of a different style, but I think the Companion was a kind of a new direction.
I wanted to acknowledge another special guest, Bill Limeberry's sister. Bill played drums on the record. I wanted to wave at you. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And the husband, it's Linda, right? Linda and Bubba. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Neither one of us have a copy of the record, by the way. I still don't have a copy.
I was just telling him, I gave mine to the producer of Kansas when I was in Atlanta to try to get us a record deal. And I left it with him. They were recording, I think it was Left Overture at the time.
Well, now we know why it's especially rare if you don't have a copy.
I do have a copy. And then, of course, I have a few friends that have the CD. But you know, something about vinyl.
Absolutely.
And you can fold out the album. Mm-hmm.
About you fellas, hearing that, you said it's been a while since you've heard it. You know, what are the memories that come to mind? Seems like you started having some muscle memory there. You were playing all the notes.
Well, you're right. It's been a long time since we've heard it. I don't know, Andy. I mean, do you
long
listen
time.
To it all?
No.
You know,
I don't have a turntable.
Well, I don't either. And
but I've got videos.
And I got it on the internet.
I've got some videos.
But they only let you listen to a little, or you have to buy it. So I've heard bits and pieces.
Well, isn't it a treat that you're here to listen
it
to
is
with
a
us?
Treat.
It is.
I listen to that. But you can see that Britt's vocals are just angelic. I mean, he sang most of the harmonies himself. His guitar work is kind of Justin Haywardish. You know, Moody Blues, you know. And, of course, the track that Andy played on, it just stepped. I mean, could you feel it just step into a different plane? I mean, and, you know, the lead work, the electric work, and then the acoustic at the end. Was,
absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing it, and I'm going, I can't believe I played on that album. It was that Andy's guitar work. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, both of you still play out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell us, I mean, for those who are in town, maybe they may have seen you. You play with Free World, right?
Yes, I've been with the Free World band for right at 9 years now.
Canceled a gig. Well, he got a replacement at the gig tonight to be here with us.
Yeah, yeah. I'd rather do this than go to Beale Street any day.
And we were talking, Mike, you've played it.
I do. I have two projects actually now, and one is I've actually been doing it about 20 years. I do a tribute to Pink Floyd, and it is awesome. It is it's called Pulse Tribute to Pink Floyd, and we play all around. But luckily, and Andy will attest, about 20 years ago, we came across a guitarist, an 18-year-old kid that could play David Gilmour. I mean, to the note, to the everything, sound, echo, delays, everything. So we were able to develop that into a pretty good project. It's called Pulse, out on Facebook. Pulse does Floyd. And I also do a little Allman Brothers show, too, with some old buddies of mine, whose drummer used to tour with the guy that the Pink Floyd vocalist on Have a Cigar, who is not Roger Waters or David Gilmour. It was the other guy. I do those. Keeps me busy, those two projects.
I know Pat and I were discussing the record quite a bit a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I saw Jody Stevens pop in of Big Star. And Pat, it reminded me of what we were talking about. You know, one, I mean, did you guys get a sense that you guys were doing something that was different from what was going on in other studios in Memphis at the time, going on other stages in Memphis at the time? I mean, we've been throwing this prog rock thing around, you know, because that's, you know, it's fun to put things in the categories just so you know where you can keep up with them. But, I mean, did you guys feel like you were doing something that was different from kind of, Memphis was telling a story at that time with soul and with rock, and this is sort of slipped through the cracks, I think, because it doesn't fit neatly into any of the stories that we've been telling ourselves about this music scene.
As soon as I heard it, I said, this is more like in line with me. And I knew right away that nobody sounded like us. And that's not hard to do when you're playing in bands, because occasionally you get to go out and hear other bands and you hear feedback from the audience and everything. But being in Companion, we rehearsed 3 nights a week for years.
What were we thinking?
We only did two cover songs, A Day in the Life, but we had our own big arrangement on that by the Beatles, and Nights in White Satin. And we kind of have an arrangement of that as well. Everything else we did was all original. And I learned so much in that band. Working with Britt as a guitarist, Bill as a drummer. Bill Imberry is amazing. We all miss him so much. And he's the one that introduced me to Companion. I moved into a house. He lived across the street, and I kept hearing a drummer over there playing drums. So I went over there one day and introduced myself, and we started jamming together. He goes, hey, I'm playing in this band called Companion, and we got one more song to do. And, man, you need to come over and play a solo on it, you know?
And he did.
And I did. I played those two solos on that The Child Goes On. And I was in the club at that point.
You know, that maybe one regret of that whole album is that Andy didn't come on earlier, and we could have used his, you know, expertise. Britt was a great songwriter, songster, vocalist, just all around. But Andy just gave it that virtuoso. I mean, because after, you know, the album was released, we kept on going and did a live show, wrote some good tunes.
Wrote some good songs.
The instrumental I wrote called Prosody was a work of art. And, I mean, not just me. I mean, his and Done and Undone was a song that Andy wrote. These were just, I mean, we just were in second gear there at that point. It was really good. It was really nice. And no, we had no idea anybody else was doing this kind of, I mean, nobody was doing the material that we wanted to hear. And that's the thing. We felt like we were doing what we would have wanted to hear ourselves. If you would go in and just say, I want the perfect band to play me a song, that's what we wanted to sound like. I mean, for me, it was just a personal, very self-indulgent preference. We did not, step in line with the other Memphis musicians. Most of them were better than us, to tell you the truth. There was a lot of good players in Memphis, so we kind of just got a niche.
Well, that's. I'm glad you're talking about that, because this is something I wanted to ask. You basically answered my question, but when I hear this record, I hear shades of so much music that I love from that era. And
eerie keyboard of Tony Banks.
You said the Moody Blues. Uh-huh. I immediately heard shades of the Moody Blues. I hear bits of early Genesis, like sort of like the
eerie keyboards.
Yes, the eerie keyboards, uh-huh. The sort of like shadowy harmonic choices. Of course, you know, and this is what I'll tell a quick story about. I met John Anderson of Yes about 10 years ago. My band Wilco was playing at a festival in New Zealand. And at catering, there's John Anderson of Yes. And of course, I'm a big fan of especially certain records, some of those earlier records. The records that really have more of the elements of the beautiful side of Yes, you know, I mean, the technical virtuosity is incredibly important, you know, and impressive. But there's a lot of moments in those Yes albums and the Genesis albums and this and King Crimson and those albums, those bands that we consider prog rock. There were still moments of great beauty. And that's the stuff that I've always gravitated to with those bands. So I run into John Anderson, and we're just exchanging pleasantries, and I ask him what he's somehow the fact that Paul Simon is also playing at this same festival comes up in conversation. And he's telling me about how excited he is to see Paul Simon. At that very moment, I was obsessively listening to Bookends, the Simon and Garfunkel album Bookends, and Bridge Over Troubled Water. These were big albums in my consciousness at the time. So he and I just started speaking about that. And John Anderson told me that when he met Chris Squire, the bass player of Yes, they started the band over a shared love of Simon and Garfunkel's Bookends. That was the album that brought Chris Squire and John Anderson together, as well as Sgt. Pepper's. And it was those two albums that pushed them towards doing something that ambitious. They wanted to put, he told me that they wanted to put something into the world that had that level of beauty and that level of ambition. And when I listened to your record, and I was thinking about this on the way here, and I've thought about it many times, I feel that in this record. It's an impulse towards beauty. It's an impulse towards a deep, soulful, smart reaching for injecting this sense of real beauty into the rock vocabulary. And it really comes through in this record. And you mentioned after listening, you kind of said to me, you know, seems like we were a little self-indulgent here, but thank God that you were. I applaud you for that self-indulgence. And I think that, you know, we need that, you know, that's what shines through in this record. That sense of that you guys are going for it. And you're creating your own little world. I mean, when this record starts to play, you're immediately brought into your world, and you sustain it through the entire record. It's its own little universe, and so it was a successful self indulgence.
It was a manifestation of that impulse.
And I love what you were saying about Brit, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because I'm so glad that you used the word heart, because I hear that heart in this music. There's a lot of heartfulness. There's a lot of soulfulness in the music that keeps it from just being cerebral prog rock. It's that beating heart inside that I think really gives it its depth. And I think opening the record with Blackbird is such an incredible, it was such an interesting choice, and I'd love to ask you about that, because, you know, the song Blackbird being about freedom and about being about taking flight from suffering sets the tone for the whole feeling of the record, you know, in these themes of the child goes on and to the better days. And Second Chance, and just the name of the band, Companion, is such a warm, it's such a invitation of warmth from the very beginning. Do you have any thoughts about, I mean, was that conscious in your minds about this was something that you were trying to express through this?
Well, you mentioned Yes. You know, Yes's first hit was a Beatles tune. They covered a Beatles tune and did it quite well. So we did Blackbird, and now Blackbird, of course, your listeners are probably aware, it's a very guitar folk, you know, the way it's played, Blackbird setting in the day. But we said, let's do a symphonic type of arrangement. So that's kind of what, and to tell you the truth, we wanted a hit record. I mean, let's be honest. We were self-indulgent, and it's only good, it's good, if you don't get a hit record with it, then at least you've got your pride. You know, you didn't sell out and then still not get a deal, which is but Blackbird, we of course Britt was a Beatles, and I've got a story about Ringo Starr I have to tell you, but we decided to do Blackbird as the opening thing and just make a bed grand. Now we, of course, the way the guitar is, it's not full chords as much as we did it with the grand piano and the strings and the low synthy bass notes and things. We kind of almost had to figure out what the chord structure might have been,
right,
had it been written a different way.
I wrote as I was listening, I wanted to ask you about the reharmonization of the chords for Blackbird, because you're right, the chords are sort of implied, and you know, covering a Beatles tune that can be a daunting task.
Yeah, it works or it doesn't.
And to do it with both reverence and kind of and injecting your own spirit into.
Well, it's not a song with harmony. Usually, it's a solo vocal, and Britt puts all these harmonies on it, which basically creates the chord structure. Anytime you're adding different parts, you create the chord, and that just kind of, I took the piano from there and said, well, this is what it would be with your chord, with your vocals. This is how it would be. So. That's how it came up.
It's beautiful piano.
It is a beautiful song. I mean, obviously. So
we'll be annotating all night, I'm sure. I know Pat's a rock nerd. We won't wind him up and let him
talk later.
Yeah. I did want to ask one question. Just, you know, the reason we're all here and in this context is this record has in some regard been lost to time. And David, my good friend here, is a record store owner, so he wanted to know a bit more about what this label, the label is that put it out. It was a private press, I'm guessing. You know, what was the reception immediately after the record coming out? Why not a second record from the group? And if we could quickly sort of create that context, and then we'll get into the second side.
Very quickly, it was on Rave, R-A-V Records, and we had a fellow that believed in us, a producer that helped us get it out. What can I say? If I recall correctly, he went to L.A. to shop it and never came back. I'm sorry to say that, but, I mean, he was a producer, and he was looking out for himself, but I never heard back from him personally. He helped us a great deal get it out, but the reception was great. There was a local... record store chain called Peaches. Was that it, Peaches? And it made their top sales for a while. And funny story, real quick. It was out on the airwaves. WLYX was playing it. Got picked up by 103. They started playing it in their rotation. So I'm at my dad's store. He owns convenience stores one day. And I had the radio, and the album came on. I turned it up, and he goes, "Turn that thing down." I said, "Daddy, that's my song. I wrote, turn that thing up." So we did get some airplay, and we had great success locally with it. It was just a matter of getting picked up.
You know, the relative scarcity of it today, do you have any idea of how many shipped in its time, or how available it was in its time?
First pressing? I thought it was like 3,000 to 5,000 that sold. I mean, if we could have done that, across the country, we'd be talking a different story, but...
Smile and
Did a couple of shows at the Orpheum, and we played Solomon Alfred's on the square, pretty good bit. Actually, we did a thing at the Orpheum called Phantom of the Orpheum. It was a play, and we provided the music, and it was even at the very end where the big Wurlitzer organ. Y'all are familiar with the Orpheum. It's got a big Wurlitzer that. Hydraulic, you know, and I got up and played that big Wurlitzer and the Phantom and the lady, you know, I forgot the ending, but we provided the music to Phantom of the Orpheum. It was quite an experience.
We were down in the orchestra pit too. We were down. It was like about this much room, but all of our stuff was down there. It was tough.
Think up. Bill Disson says he remembers seeing you all play at Memphis State at some point.
I think we might have done a few shows there, or one or, you know, it's been so long. We didn't play that much, to tell you the truth. We were an original band, and you just had to play cover tunes or else. I mean,
well, thank you all for being with us tonight. I still don't think I got an answer. Why not another record from Companion?
Probably our biggest mistake was not sticking with it. I was trying to think on the way here in case you asked that. What happened? I didn't want to break up the band. I'm not sure what happened. We just could not get enough traction. I'm afraid our music was, you know, just not on the mainstream enough to do it, and we should have stuck it out, because that's what bands usually do. They get famous and then they break up.
There was one song that you recorded in addition to this album that on the digital version that's on the internet. There's one more song.
Anytime, Anywhere.
Oh, Anytime, Anywhere. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I played. Oh, there's some videos on YouTube where I played it on that.
And how did that song come about? Was that the beginning of a second album, or?
It was. It was some of the newer material that we didn't quite get at when we pressed the first pressing. So that was an after effect.
And so the record was reissued by a European company. Andy, we were talking a bit about, you know, they remastered it and put it back out. Were you guys involved in that process at all? That there's a new cover and all of that?
No. When I discovered that, I was tickled. But I didn't know who it was or how it happened. I think there's a statute of limitations. After so many years, you can go in and do that with previously done material. I don't know. That's my understanding.
I don't know about that. But
I mean, publishing can go out in 50 years. But as far as taking the pressing, I got calls and said, oh, look, we re-released the album. There's no money involved. I've heard that more than once. There's no money, but we're re-releasing it. And it was, I believe Wayne was in on, it was a European type of effort. It, for some reason, it's big in Europe, Italy.
Do you happen to know if it was taken from the original masters, or was it done from a vinyl copy?
That what we just listened to is a remastered, and it almost has to be from my ear.
Well, what we just listened to was the original record, which sounds fantastic. By the way,
I can't believe that. My record player never sounded like that.
Welcome to the Memphis Listening Lab.
Yeah.
Okay.
Holy
Let's hear it for
cow.
The labs.
Well, I will say, I mean, since my friend did not sell me that vinyl copy, I've been listening all these years just to the digital version that's out there. Listened to it several times today on the way here, and I'm hearing things listening in here and listening to this vinyl copy that I haven't heard before. So it's a beautiful pressing. The mixes are gorgeous.
The mixing was done at Ardent, I believe, and it was mastered in Nashville, Masterphonics.
So right. it was mixed at Ardent.
I think it was mixed in Ardent, yeah. Wayne Bradley took care of that. He was the master engineer that did it, and all credit goes to him for that. I cannot remember the producer that came on late that picked us up, that wanted to, you know, shop us and everything. So he was instrumental in that.
And the video that's on YouTube of you performing the song, the post album song, where was that recorded? Where was that video done? It says it's at a place called DAT.
DAT. Yeah, that was a TV studio on Main Street. It was at a place right above at the time called Three Sisters Dress Shop. It was upstairs, a very small, just like one camera, I think, is all they had, or maybe two. Pat Ryan was the guy in charge of that, did that for us.
Was that for a television show, or was it for...
I think he did it out of the love of the band, yeah, more than anything. I don't remember paying a penny for that video myself. I don't think Britt or Wayne did either, or, you know, they would have openly talked about it.
And it's on the WYXR Facebook announcement for this event.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, you can go.
Oh, it's fun.
It's amazing.
It's
an incredible performance, and the vocal harmonies are stunning. You know, everyone's playing it, and it sounds amazing. I was just blown away that there was actual footage of you performing that I didn't know about until last night. So it was really exciting to see.
There's more. We might not want to bring it up, but there's other footage out there.
We did a whole about an hour's worth at WKNO Studios, TV Studios, and I actually brought that, but nobody's got a VHS player. I've had this all these decades. It says companion on it.
There's another lab for that. We'll have to build that lab.
I bet y'all got a lab somewhere. But no, I always kept a VHS player.
Well, I wanted to say, I went in there because I wanted to listen to some of it in that room as well, which also sounded fantastic. Oh, wow. Sounded just beautiful. And I think there's something extremely poignant about the last 2 minutes of the album, the repeating of that mantra of, let our music be your companion. And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, you know, the fact that the band is called Companion, which is such a warm sentiment. You know, there's so much of that in the music. in the spirit of it. The fact that, you know, and I think about this a lot with a lot of the music that I have loved all my music fan years, and the music that I play on my radio show, some of the music that I've made myself. This idea that, you know, when you make music that is out of step, you know, with the marketplace, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the marketplace, although, like you said, I'm sure you would love to have had a hit at the time. You know, we don't make music completely in a vacuum, even if we sometimes want to think we are. We are making it to communicate. But the fact that sometimes this music that you put so much heart into, you put so much time into, obviously listening to it, you can hear that every detail is considered. It's all deliberate. It's all extreme. You know, you mean everything that you're doing in this music. And when music is made that way, and it necessarily doesn't have an impact at the time of its making, you just never know, right? You never know if you put it out there into the world with that much heart. You just don't have any control about how it's going to ripple out into the world and how over time it's going to deepen in a way. You know, it's like sometimes when you're in the midst of making the music, you don't even realize it. And it's not until it has a chance to get out there into the world, kind of cook in a way, you know, and ripple through time to fall on someone like me, you know, who just stumbles upon the record in a record store and is genuinely moved by it. I think hearing it in there and hearing you say to us, the listener, let our music be your companion, it's a very quietly powerful sentiment. And thank you for bringing this beautiful music into the world.
Oh, thank God. You're so welcome. I'm so happy that this has occurred. It's like a dream for me, and it's just so unreal. I grew up a lot in that band, and it sure taught me a lot and gave me many, many memories. Now I've got 10 times more, it seems, you know. So thank all of y'all, everyone that took part in this, all of you, and just me and, like Mike said, we're humbled and we're glad to be here. And oh, Lord.
Any questions? Anybody like to know anything? But this is, of course, you have to remember, we were a product of the 60s. This album was probably done. We probably wrote most of the material 75, 76. I don't know what the stamp date is on the album. I would have to look, but 78, maybe?
I think it's 76. Well, see,
that was
right?
A question I knew was ashamed
it was.
To ask.
I knew it was.
There are some people in it saying 74, so I guess that's debunked. It's not 74.
It can't be 74, because I remember my son was like 4 when we played the Orpheum. And Chris, he was 4 years old running around the Orpheum stage when we debuted the album. And he was born in 72, so it would have to be 76.
Well, then we'd been saying 77. You want to inspect it? Well, my secretary is here, Brent. I trust Brent, too.
I've got one opened, which is that one, and I've got one that's still sealed. And they have been on a bookshelf in my house.
So that being said, a child of the 60s was what we were. So the music, I mean, we were all still like peace and love. Even in the mid-70s, after the Vietnam War and all that in 72. So it was still part of us just to, you know, the peace, the love, the music. That's all we were about. We just wanted to play the things that we would have liked to have heard somebody else play if it wasn't us.
Well, that's why I think it has its power. If you're doing that, then that means that the music can have a life even beyond you, because you are sort of you're creating from a place that's outside of external expectations. You're just digging deep, and I think that really comes through in the record.
awesome. I learned years ago, people, well, if you have expectations, you will be disappointed. I do everything with no expectations. I do it for the love of doing it. I do it to please me in so many ways, not in a selfish way, but in a self-interest way. Because when you understand the self, you'll realize there's nobody else in the room, you know. So this is where I come from.
And did you feel like when you, I mean, obviously you were all brought together by this shared love of this kind of music, this particular music. Did it feel like you were kind of in a secret club? I mean, I think there must have been, did you feel like you were part of a community, even if it was a small community in Memphis, that did have a shared love for this type of, this type of progressive rock, these English bands, this sort of approach to record making? I mean, did you feel completely in your own bubble, or was there a...
I don't think we were completely. I mean, I've played with other musicians besides and Companion that we're along the same lines. We like the prog rock, you know. I mean, I grew up on Keith Emerson, Rick Wakeman of Yes, Tony Banks of Genesis, Pink Floyd. So it was just us wanting to kind of be like them in a way, but you can't be like them. You find yourself being what you can do, and that's your style. That's your motif or whatever. I can't be Keith Emerson as much as I'd love to be, but you might hear a little bit, like in that one track with the synthy and the portamento. That was the style back, you know, the sticks, the Keith Emerson type of keyboarding, but there weren't many people. You know, I've worked with a lot of different people. I worked with Reba Russell, and we were an R&B group, you know, and had record deals and many other things. Played with a lot of people, but I did not enjoy that. I mean, I played a set with Ringo Starr. So if you're dropping names, that's a big one. And I hold that dear to my heart that, you know, I got to play a set with Ringo Starr. But the music, the basic parts, is nothing compared to what we had with Companion for a short period of time. So you're right. The music is the thing.
Well, you can hear the inspiration. It's a palpable sense of, you all sound very inspired.
We were, and it was a great experience. Now, the one thing is we had the freedom. The studio that we were at, Wayne was familiar with it. We were able to go at our own time, at our own pace, and create. We didn't just block time and say, you got to cut this. This track's got to be done by a certain time. We took our time. The pieces, the parts were the important thing, not the time, not the getting a record deal or anything. Getting the music to go together. And it was difficult in a ways that Wayne had his idea, I had my ideas, and Britt had his ideas. On the couple of the tunes that we all wrote together, you will know, it is kind of meld of all three, but...
And I think that's my favorite track, the song you will know. It's when I do return to the record, I usually have that song in my head
Sticks,
for
yeah.
days. It's such a beautiful, it's so catchy. It's such a almost like an anthem, you know. It's like an anthem of positivity, and it's... I think the fact that, like you're saying, that's the one where you all came together and contributed, you know, it's greater than the sum of its parts,
is.
Kind of
and,
thing.
And we didn't know at the time how much fun we were having, to tell you the truth, but it was a great time.
Well, we've certainly had fun here tonight with Andy and Mike. It's truly been a treat, and I'm sure they wouldn't mind hanging back and answering some questions if you guys want to come. And then also, it's got these wonderful photographs as well. of the band in their heyday. Thank you for supporting WYXR and events such as these. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. It's been a treat for us to, you know, we celebrate all kinds of music on the radio station, but this is closest to the heart of our mission, is to be able to explore and research and archive and preserve and also share and discuss and interact with this Memphis music, much of it that has gone unheard for some time, or has moved through time and moved through context to find a new home, a new place, a new meaning. And that's what we talk about when we say that we're raised by sound and we're the station with the city soul. And so it's truly, truly a pleasure to be a steward of this music, a steward of these moments. And so we hope that you will join us again for another one of our stereo sessions. Again, it's presented by Mempho and Nexair. We want to thank Garner for sponsoring this session. We want to thank Tennessee Humanities, who gave us a grant to help us with this project as well, as well as the Memphis Listening Lab, Via Productions, and am I missing anyone? Tamburino, absolutely. And so thank you so much. I'm over the moon. I'm ecstatic. Thank you, Brian Dixon, for helping us with our branding. I did a great job with that. And also, thanks, Kate Teague. I got him. Thanks, Kate Teague, for planning this event. Great job. And all of our volunteers, if you have a show on the air, you helped us with selling T-shirts in here. All of our volunteers, if you're in the building. Thanks, Ron, for letting us borrow your copy of the record for over here. Thanks, Pat Sansone, for coming out to be with us. He is fresh from the studio. Wilco's working on some new material, so thank you for being with us.
And thank you, JB, for being an amazing host and for all you do.
We'll see you next month for Sam the Sham's Hard and Heavy. And Sam, we're going to go ahead and speak it in existence. He will be in the building, so we'll be excited for that.
Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and